question?
Regarding the pyramids in Mexico, what is their background and how do they compare with the Great Pyramid?
Well, regarding the pyramids in Mexico, these are real old and ancient pyramids, and they go back into pre-Mayan periods. Though early, they might be considered part of early Mayan kingdom. It's a possibility that some of the later pyramid building in the Mayas themselves were stepped pyramid temples, were somewhat influenced by the tribe of Manasseh, which came over about 760 B.C., and they came into the Caribbean and then into Central America. And of course, this was the coming of the white gods, Quetzalcoatl, the pattern of the original symbol of the god of the skies, white children coming, according to old prophecies which they had. Why, almost all of the old and ancient peoples in South America and Central America had some record of the expected coming of these so-called white sons of the eternal from the heavens. But the most developed area of it was among the Maya. And the Tulapeks are also a very old civilization like the Maya. And we know that the white Manasseites came to the Maya and were received as the divine offspring of the god of the sky. And they affected their culture to some extent. That's why the Mayas, the Tulapek, even Aztecs, though Aztec demon gods got involved later, and Asian gods and Aztecs became quite a brutal thing. The Mayans were a much more peaceful order of society, and their culture was advanced by the white man's coming. And they include all the records in history of things ancient, like that of Noah and of the Adamic race and all this. They've got that all woven into their Mayan traditions. Though in weaving it in, at no place do they relate themselves to it. In other words, this is all the history of the race of the offsprings of the god of the heaven and so forth. So this being true, why there were changes made in some of their architecture. And we know that Mayans built step temples in the Yucatan. But the temples around Mexico, some of these go back 11,000 years, and some of them go back longer than that. These temples are covered over with lava, and the radiocarbon testing proves their great antiquity. In the days when Atlantis was a thriving civilization in the Atlantic Ocean, where the Atlantic, basic southern Atlantic, is today, a great continent landmass extended almost over the entire ocean, and had land bridges that connected with Africa and Europe. And there were waterways also, great masses of water, small seas. But the sinking of Atlantis left the great areas of the ocean that would come across from the Carolinas on across to Europe and then south to North Africa and the areas of around the Azores. All that was once one part of this planet, this continent. Now, the temple... The ancient Atlanteans had pyramid temples on the high mountains. These pyramid temples were temples unto the worship of Yahweh, or Yahweh Puta, the god of the universe. And these, the ancient peoples of Atlantis, generally were from the original Tungus peoples, very highly developed civilization, and they had the administration of high spiritual orders. For instance, the spirits of the celestial children, visible at times, but never embodied in flesh, used to serve in these ancient pyramid temples in ancient Atlantis. And this is also true in temples, we are told, that existed in the Pacific, where now that continent is gone, though there are still islands and remnants of that Pacific civilization left. We are told that in the areas of the of what now later is covered by the jungles of the Mata Grosso, that there were civilizations and steppes, and there were temples around the world. Temples in Atlantis, temples in what we would call Mexico, as well as Central and South America, temples in the Pacific, temples in China. And that after the fall, Luciferian rebellion had gone its full run, and Mongolization and violence had set in, these areas, of course, were lost in the catastrophes that engulfed them. And of course, in the ancient records from Atlantis, like the Book of Horus in Egypt, which tells much of this story. It tells how that the celestial children out of heavenly planes came to earth and served in the great pyramid temples of Atlantis, served the one true God, and that when the rebellion came, when Lucifer declared himself the God of the universe, the great dragon serpent God, and how the intermingling started, the mongrelization, the catastrophe, and Yahweh Putah was angry. He withdrew the celestial children. They no longer served in the temples. He sent catastrophe upon them. First, having warned them through his ministering spirits and through his children, and also warned those that worshiped, still worshiped him and hadn't gone over to this pollution, of things that were to come and of the eventual embodiment in the earth, in bodies like they had, of the children of Yahweh Putah. And that there would be another temple similar to the one they had in Atlantis by shape built again. It would contain the secret measures of the purposes of God in the earth. And this is one of the reasons why the Egyptians accepted Enoch and Job and these white men when they came down to Egypt as the children of Yahweh Putah. And actually the Adamic race was accepted to them as the embodiment promise of the children of spirit that had been in their ancient lands and temples serving them. And they talked about the tremendous symphonies of music and the tones and the spiritual exhilaration that came from the music of the spheres in the temple in Atlantis. And they used to talk about the magic and patterns of spirit and light and color, and how these waves of color had strengthening forces, and how they emerged from the control of the priesthood of the sons of Yahweh Putah and so forth. And after they were withdrawn because of the mongrelization, the catastrophe, and the announcements were coming that the catastrophe was going to engulf the continent of Atlantis, and that it would sink beneath the waters, earthquakes would shake it, mountains would spew with fire, clouds of vapor would rise, and areas of earth would sink. And that they were warned, who still served Yahweh Putah and listened to his words, to travel to the eastward. And they traveled before the last of the land bridges crumbled across North Africa, finally settled down in the Fertile Crescent around the delta of the, and all the way back up to the headwaters of the Nile River and so forth. Well, now all this is in their record, in their background. They tell this story. And of course, they told about how the great earthquakes cracked open the earth, and water from the seas roundabout ran in. And the steam blew the top of the mountains off, and the mountains erupted with fire. Pieces of the continent sank, and it shivered and trembled, and then eventually it all went down. And they tell about that. Well, now, the earlier South American temples in Mexico may originally have been tied to this chain of temples, because you see, they go back to the periods that cover the sinking of the continent. They're that old. So some layers of civilization there go back 30 some odd thousand years. So this is no relationship to the later pyramid of Giza, which was built by our race, except that this was in the shape of those old temples, and it did have, instead of the altar step, it had no capstone, because the capstone was always rejected when they would have built it, because it was to fulfill a prophetic significance in these latter days. It did continue to contain measures. The unfortunate thing is, of course, that many didn't know the full significance of it, and in their desire and ambition, in their expectations and hope, they pursued measures which they themselves had drafted up to try to interpret what was within. And when things didn't always happen in their interpretations, then people in our day became superficially willing to cast everything aside and forget it, and then attack the whole thing. Don Bell's reports, you know, lately have attacked the Israel movement and all identity. Last week attacked everything connected with the pyramid. And the Jews are probably behind the pressure, but he probably doesn't know that. I think that he's being surfeited by people who tell him that if he doesn't come out and do this job, well, they weren't interested in his reports anymore and so forth. He didn't, and so he finally won it. But it's not built on knowledge, it's built on error. And of course, he quotes Rand, he quotes these other fellows, but he only quotes them where they're wrong. Never quotes them where they're right. This is always true of most critics. They never quote the truth, they always quote the error. There's no area of theology today where you don't find that among some of the clergy attached to that theology, there's areas of error, and you don't blame all the Methodists for men like Ex-Bishop Oxen or for Pike. I don't blame all the Episcopalians for Pike. And of course, if their general boards take a wrong trend, it's time for people to get out. But the fact remains that that there's never any fairness with those that fight deep truth that affect racial history or the building of the kingdom when they fight the kingdom or they go all out on this. There's nothing makes the devil more angry, more disturbed than the gospel of the kingdom, because as long as he can hold the earth, well, he's not too worried. But when he sees the kingdom spreading and people waking up and participating in this, then he fights to hold this, destroy this, wipe this out. So the actual relationship between these pyramids go way back to basic symbols, probably, basic temples. There is a pyramid, very, very high one in China, covered with dirt and trees grow on the side of it. But it is a mountain. It's a huge monster pyramid, way up in the motherland, up in the high steppes. And it's never been penetrated lately, though there's tunnels into it, say, so there's something inside. But white explorers know it's there, but never has conditions been right for them to make any real opening excavation. Right now it's inside of Mongol and Russian territory, and so nothing being done on it at the present time. But we do know the antiquity, the great antiquity of those pyramids, because there is down in the furniture found in them and so forth, radiocarbon so far back. And then in one of these temples that was inundated with lava at the same time, there are Chinamen with jade beads found. So it goes so far back that Chinamen with jade, but not too far from Peking, because of the jade hills where they come from, were down there with their jade ornaments and got buried with this volcanic sweeping over the entire community. Of course, they were buried and sealed up. They'd have been burned to cinders. They hadn't been deep down in the side of these big temples and so forth, but they couldn't get out, and they died there. Another question? Lemuria may have preceded Atlantis in its descent, that is, areas of it. But they were not too far apart, though the sinking didn't all occur at one time. The catastrophes that were involved in the sinking of Lemuria not only involved volcanic activity from earthquakes and water and steam and subsidence and terrific rents, but it also involved nuclear war. So Luciferian forces in the later struggles that involved the Earth, nuclear war did take place, because the isotopes can still be found on Easter Island and in various parts of the Pacific that were fused pieces like trinitite, which is made out of glass, and out of sand, you know, fused together. Many of these things were never radioactive before the nuclear transitions took place through a nuclear war, and the radioactivity in many of these isotopes are there yet, which were never original materials. There's long chains of evidence of material that go back, connected with tying the peoples of ancient Lemuria with the mainland of Asia and the high steppes. They go way back to great antiquity. We have 100 and some odd various spots where in the entire Pacific area, islands and things that are found, all identifying them to a one-time huge continent with one super religion and so forth. Well, originally they were not pagan, but they became pagan. And they became pagan by Luciferianism, the coming of the serpent and the dragon religions. And the god of light, who was the eternal god of the heavens, was supplanted by all types of false deities. One could talk all evening just on Mu and its tie-in, and even there are scriptural facets that are involved in things that crisscrossed way back in ancient history, mysteries in the book of Job and so forth. Well, shall we say that the Azores are rising, that areas of Atlantis are coming up, that they're now having to put buoys out in various areas, so still in the edge of shipping lanes and across some of the smaller shipping lanes, so that they don't hit reefs that are coming up that were not there when I was a boy. It's coming up this fast. In fact, there's been quite a lot of activity, subterranean activity in the Atlantic Ocean lately, and there is activity in the Pacific in various parts of it. Well, I wouldn't get involved in that. There may be some small areas where it's rising. I look to see more go down before more comes up. The question had been that was the land rising between here and Catalina? But there is land rising between Catalina and Japan. Is there another question? Yes.
Are we on continents
or can I change the subject?
You can change the subject.
What's the difference between Mystery Babylon the Great and the Beast itself? Well, Mystery Babylon the Great is the whole satanic order. And the Beast system is, of course, the whole political system of the satanic order. In other words, but Mystery Babylon is political, social, economic, religious. The Beast system is the whole racial system of the enemies of the kingdom. For instance, communism is the Beast system. Okay? Beast peoples are the non-kingdom races. But well, the Jews today head and lead the Beast system in the world. In other words, they are the offspring of Lucifer, and they head the Beast system. They're more cunning than some of the others, but they are referred to by Peter as brute beasts, you know. You know, Peter says that they're brute beasts made to be taken and destroyed. So we may well say that Jews belong to the Beast system. They head the Beast system, the system of the Antichrist, and man without the Spirit of God, number is 666, and of course this is the number of the Luciferian order. What number the Antichrist is the number of the beast. And Mystery Babylon involves the super plans for world governments, the entrapments, the economic upheavals, as long as all the false religions of the world are under the beast system. The false prophet is the symbolizes the leadership of all false religions, symbolizes all false religions being stemmed by the same satanic family. All the evil in the world is propagated by Lucifer and his household. So this continues, there's no change in that.
Did you know that New York City, one of the recent, when they built a lot of new mammoth glass type buildings down in Manhattan Island, one of the recent ones, right on the top, and it's about 75 stories high, there are about 50 feet numbers, 666, in neon.
Uh-huh.
And they show up as far as you can see, even on an airplane. Have you heard anything on that? I've often wanted to find out who owns that building. Maybe we'll get these ones.
This is the first I've heard of it. Say. I never heard of this building covered with sixes.
I haven't either, but I've seen it.
Why does it have? Well, it's arrived at because God said, here it is. It's the number of man without spirit. It's the number of Luciferian destruction. It's the triology of evil. It's the man without the Spirit of God. Man with the Spirit of God is 777.
Does that have anything to do with the Hebrew, old original Hebrew lettering system?
Oh, there is a numerology of early Hebrew. Say, 7 was a divine number. 8 was a new thing. 9's a number of judgment. I could give you the value of every number in Hebrew for what it symbolized. So, and the perfect number for a divine seed is 7. And so spirit, soul, and body, it's 777. But the number 6 is without spirit. And so embodied beings without spirit, without the Spirit of God, is 6. And so their spirit, their soul, their body is without the Spirit of God. And being even mutated now in rebellion, well, it becomes a symbol of the beast system of Antichrist 666. Divine seed has to proceed forth from God. The 6 seed comes forth from Luciferian impact today. However, there's many peoples that might be under the beast system that because they never were Spirit of God, but they were good in the beginning.
What is the saying, judge not that you be judged?
Who is what judgment you judge says to be out to you? Well, this is the critical attack that's made by Christians against Christians, merely because they're gossiping, fault-finding troublemakers, say. And they always go, there's certain people like this, and they're within the camp. I mean, this is their shortcoming, this is their fault, and they run around and they're always judging within the camp and so forth. And so the scripture says, judge not that you be not judged, that said that you judge so shall be meted out to you. Now, there is such a thing, he that is spiritual judgeth all things. This is relating to the children of God being children of the Spirit, as against the natural men of the world order who are not of the Spirit. For we are the only administrators, judges, and rulers under God that have the capacity to rightly delineate So therefore, he that spiritual judgeth all things, the Apostle Paul tells us. And this is in the book of Corinthians, where he just said that the spirit in us is not the spirit that's in the natural man. Neither can the natural man comprehend the things that we understand. Not that we're not in physical bodies, in a world where natural men reside, but the content of the intellect of the children of the kingdom has drawn its essence of being from God himself. So therefore, this being true, we fall into an entirely different category. We are thoroughly justified in the administrative judging of all things on the basis of the spirit that is within us. But we do not judge fellow Christians because they come under the same factor of total justification that we do. The only thing is that when the enemy can surfeit an individual and the individual serves the beast or works for the enemy, then you have a right to judge the force or motive that is motivating this to keep it from injuring the church or to injure the structure of the kingdom. But I'll show you this passage. For therefore the things we speak are not in words that would have been designed by man's brain. When it says man's wisdom here, the word here is referring to man's brain. But the things which we speak of are that which the Holy Spirit teaches, comparing spiritual things with spiritual things teaches. Now he said, concerning this in the second chapter of 1 Corinthians, it says, what God hath revealed unto us by his Spirit, for the Spirit searcheth out all the things of God. He says, we speak in wisdom, even a mystery of things which were hidden in wisdom, which God ordained before the world unto our illumination, our glory, and unto our knowledge. But it wasn't for the world order round about, the beast system, they couldn't understand it. So therefore he says that none of the princes of this world knew this wisdom. They couldn't understand this inherent mystery. They couldn't think in this wavelength of the mind of the Father because they were not spirit of his Spirit. They were not a part of him. And in rebellion against him, they had no capacities even to be illuminated by the truth. And so therefore, none of the princes of this world knew, for had they known it, they never would have crucified the Lord of glory. But when they crucified Christ, this gave him opportunity as a man without one transgression of his own, though he carried all transgression upon his shoulders by will. They couldn't keep him out of the netherworld, and they couldn't keep him in it after he got there. So had they been smart, Lucifer never would have crucified Christ. But when he crucified Christ, he lost control of all the Adamic sons. When Christ came up out of the grave, he brought them all with him. Now it says here that, so therefore there's wisdom they couldn't understand. It's written, I have not seen or ear heard, this is in the natural senses, nor is there entered in through this natural result the things which God has in plan or preparation for them that love him, but they are to be known unto us. For God reveals them unto us by his Spirit, for the Spirit searcheth out all these things. They're not just perceived by the ear and by the senses as to the original source of its wisdom and understanding. So therefore, for what man knoweth the things of man, save the Spirit of man which is in him? Even so the things of God would no man know, except the Spirit of God was resident in him. If he, therefore, when he was born into this world, had the Spirit of God, then he was the offspring of God, he was the issue of God, and he was the different from any of these other people. Now the Apostle Paul said, we did not receive the Spirit, which was the Spirit of the world, but we received the Spirit, which is out of God, and that we might know all the things that are given to us of God, which things we speak, not just in words of natural evaluation through the senses, but through this higher guidance and higher intellectual source of wisdom which comes from the Father. So he said the natural man, this is just the natural man without the Spirit, he could not understand these things. The things of the Spirit of God seem like foolishness unto him, and he would never know them because they are spiritually discerned. But he that is spiritual judgeth all things, yet he himself could be judged by no man without Spirit. They don't have the capacity to judge because they can't understand. They can't know. Therefore, for who hath known the mind of Yahweh that he might instruct him? We have the mind of the embodiment of God. So that's where that steps in. Now, is there another question? This is because you are a divine seed and body. A question was asked, and so we will answer this one too. Then we'll go on. The question was asked concerning the light carriers. Now, we will not go into all the factors and material that relates to light carriers, because there are certain things that cannot be related. The early wisdom schools of our race started from unusual revelation. Revelation which God gave to men like Enoch with the exceptional experience of being retaken back out and re-educated through the dimensions and the planes and the heavenly orders and brought back to earth so that while he was still in a body and capable of remembering these things, he'd record these things in the book and pass these immediate traditions back to the family of God that were in earth, his brethren as well as his progeny. So Enoch did this, and also Job was given unusual and exceptional spiritual revelation. Now these two men represented two of the most informed men of their time, both of them taught of God, both of them having unique experiences. Both of them set up spiritual orders and orders that were to affect the thinking of people in symbolism and form, but also to be kind of schools of wisdom and knowledge where men who sought after deeper truth and deeper wisdom and knowledge would apply themselves to know. And thus Enoch and Job headed these great schools. Now, out of one of them comes the master builders, the Masonos. The whole concept of master builders was that the children of the God of Light were now embodied in earth to build a kingdom. So the building of the master builders was to establish in the earth all of the administrative levels of a kingdom. They were master builders of a kingdom in which they would have to apply wisdom and divine sciences to the technology of raising up their architecture, of raising up their civilization and their technique, as well as all of it being related to divine law. They understand patterns and knowledge that were spiritual applications to the natural sciences. Along with this also was the natural testimony unto the greatness of God. Then there was a spiritual order of spiritual lore, which also was being studied. These two dual schools taught the wisdom of these things. And later, as the Levites were in the days of Moses selected to carry out the spiritual orders of the priesthood, they received traditionally whole areas of deep wisdom that came out of the spiritual order. Now, among these master builders, which were called Masonos, this is relatively a Latin name, though the Apostle Paul said, "I am a wise master builder," used the Greek frame for it, and no other foundation can any man lay than that which is laid in Yahshua, or God embodied in the earth as Messiah. If you're going to build in the earth the kingdom of God, you have to build it with the king, and you have to build it with the God who became embodied as the king, and therefore the chief cornerstone is seals the whole building together. And the Apostle Paul was a student of this wisdom and lore. He was a master builder. He was a master mason, if you'll have this. Though masonry today is a sad, deteriorated, degenerated institution, far removed from its ancient wisdom, but there still exists an area of society within the society and not necessarily known to the high officials in areas of it, which were light carriers. These light carriers were the symbol of those who were spiritually called in the ancient Masonic order to unveil and teach the great truths. They were virtually priests in the order, and one could be a grand master and rule over a body of the brethren. They once were called brothers. This was the thing that originally they were the brothers, and one could rule, was selected by them because of his service, of his capacities, and could be a grand master. Generally speaking, the original grand masters of the lodge were the highest priests of their order of wisdom. They were men who had spiritual illumination, had been given great knowledge, who carried on the ministry of Job in this manner, and were deep devotees of the spiritual lore. So they understood, these light carriers, the ancient wisdom. They knew that they were the children of the Most High God. They understood sonship. They understood the symbol of how far they had traveled into earth and how far they would have to travel in the earth. Generally, then, there were a certain number, which we will not discuss how many, but there were these original number of light carriers. This was much greater than at later periods. And these light carriers were totally responsible for the education of young men that had passed they started even as early as 13, but they started to teach young men who especially seemed adapted or who were most interested or showed an inclination, who came from families of master builders within the race and who desired to know. And therefore, if they showed the aptitude of their fathers and they were adapted to be taught. And so they were taught these things. Many times a person would be selected 20 or 25 or 30. Quite often they were selected at 30. And taught to be light carriers. They were given certain cues, certain mysteries, certain areas of knowledge, and their responsibility was to keep this knowledge alive. Their responsibility was to tell it, to teach it, to see that it moved into the lodges, and that always the brotherhood knew that these were the ancient secret symbols. Later, as the lodge worked out what we call degree work, like fraternities have worked out degree work, some of the degree work carried the mysteries and the symbols, but past the seventh degree, they started to get into rites and symbols as the lodge was being invaded by Luciferian forces who saw the great significance. The early light carriers were the sons of Yahweh. Of course, they knew this, and as such, they one thing that they carried, this identification, they carried a winged orb, and it had within the orb the all-seeing eye. This was for years used as a symbol. Later, they ceased to use the emblem because the emblem was deemed duplicated by enemies who sought to lead the lodges astray. And so back in the days when the House of Rothschild formed the Illuminati, which Adam Weishaupt and others have a part of, adopted ancient emblems of the true mystery carriers of the light carriers of the lodge. And so the little disc with the all-seeing eye within its pyramids was adopted by the Illuminati so that they could deceive people as being the light carriers. And the reason why they called themselves the Illumined Ones, they were trying to surfeit the effectiveness of this ancient wisdom school in its highest spiritual center. Because whenever the enemy tried to join the lodges, they were always rebuffed because the mystery, the symbol, and the truth of the light carriers carried racial racial self-respect and called for complete racial purity in the lodge. More than this, it called for complete Christian principles within the lodge, because as light-carrying masonry transferred from Old to New Testament, it recognized Christ as the master builder. And the strongest center of the master builders in the age of the time of Christ was in London, in the Druid University of London, and in the Essene companies in Palestine. These were the two strongest centers. So therefore, they immediately, when Christ went over to Britain on the ships of Joseph of Arimathea, why, of course, the words had already preceding him that this was the son of the star. This was the one that the stars had proclaimed, from which they had sent wise men from their own assemblies to behold the Messiah, the embodiment of God. And so when Christ arrives, why, immediately the savants, the scribes, the wizards of the order, they came out to interrogate Christ, and they took him to the London University, and Jesus, with the profound wisdom, answered all their questions, and they recognized him as the master builder of all master builders, and that he was the grand master of the universe, and that this was embodied Messiah, and that he was the key, and he was that light that lighteth every man, and they understood this. In fact, they assisted in the building of the Wattle Church of Glastonbury, and they recorded that the Grand Master of the Universe had visited them in Britain and had arrived in the ships of Joseph of Arimathea. This became their ancient lore. So, therefore, when later the Jews tried to conquer Christianity, why, they had penetrated the church at Rome, but they couldn't penetrate the church at Britain because Britain had the Masonos, or the light carriers, and Master Masons. This is why the Jews tried to turn the Catholic Church with great hatred against the orders of the master builders, because they had gained control here, but this was one thing they couldn't crack. They couldn't get into this. Later, they were able to infiltrate areas of masonry, but only after they had set up their own Illuminati and counterfeited emblems and moved in, set up phony lodges, brought in Oriental orders and Oriental degrees, and now, like the Mystic Order of the Shrine, is supposed to be a play lodge, but filled with idolatry and paganism. And there's the You Take Pike's book today, Morals and Dogma, which is the main Masonic textbook, and it's filled with false religions of Brahma, Vishnu, Siva, Kali, all the pagan religions of the earth, and each one has their niche within masonry. Now, they have no partner lot with the true master builders or Masonos. They couldn't even enter the temple. The Temple of Solomon, which was the most beautiful temple built to Yahweh, was built according to divine specifications, and the priesthood wouldn't even permit these pagans to participate. And when Solomon brought in the King of Tyre, and the King of Tyre brought in these craftsmen from other places, they wouldn't let them in the temple. So when some had came to work on it, why, the priests wouldn't, the day of the dedication, they wouldn't let them in. And in fact, it almost resolved itself down into a major battle between the peoples of Tyre, and there was trouble from this time on. But the thing is that all the way through, they were trying to penetrate the temple. They were trying to get in, and they were trying to destroy the spiritual lore and the wisdom of the race. They tried it in the Christian period, and of course, under the Illuminati and under this symbol, they moved in. That's why the Illuminati has some of the emblems that belong to the light carriers. The word Illuminati is, of course, means the illumined one. So you see, the Jews stole this, which goes way, way back. And yet today, the only true center of real masonry is carried down in the symbols of the light carriers. And light carriers today find themselves even shut out of the lodges virtually, or they won't participate in lodges that have become too dirty for them, and they won't move in because they're so far removed from the truth. However, there are light carriers that are in the lodges in America and in England and so forth that are striving to cleanse the lodge and to produce a comeback. There are people outside that are not in the order at this moment because of its defection that still carry the light, and will train others to carry the light, maybe never tell them about this until they're ready to tell them what it is that they have been brought up on and what they've been trained to teach. But light carriers will replace themselves. Generally, they'll have at least two replacements, and this has been going on for a long time. So light carriers is a kind of mission that exists among the race in carrying out the true principles of the great wisdom schools of our race. And the reason that this question is asked, some want to know more about it. There are things that we can't tell you about it. There are things that are best left untold, lest again there be, by this very process, more Jew infiltration to deceive the elect, if possible. We're getting too much of almost possible deception. We've got to pull a lot of people out from it. Let's not give them any keys that unnecessary communication might provide. Another question.
What is the term meant when Paul says,
chapter and verse there in your question?
No,
have
I
you got it?
Sorry,
you don't have it? Well, then I'll supply it.
He's talking about who are the Israelites?
That's over the book of Romans.
Yeah, those are
all right. Now, and we know all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose, for those whom he did foreknow. This is before the foundation of the world. This is a celestial plane. These are the children of spirit, which in the book of Ephesians, the first chapter, you were told were in the bosom of the Father in love before the world was framed, already blessed with all spiritual blessings. Now these are his own son's household that he elected before the foundation of the world, that they were going to reside in the world, to build his kingdom. He foreknew them, and those he did foreknow, he did predestinate. Now therefore, the word says, that we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, who are called according to his purpose. For whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate to conform the image of his son. He did predetermine, therefore, that these children were going to measure up to the divine embodiment, and that they were divine children embodied in the earth, but now they would come under the fall, but they would then measure up to this fullness, for we have been predestinated to conform to the image of the son. Therefore, it says here, for whom he did foreknow, he did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his son, that these foreknown ones could be the first, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. Now this, where it talks about that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. Moreover, whom he did predestinate, them he called, and whom he called, he also justified, and whom he justified, them he also glorified. The only translative error here is that the church of the firstborn, or the children of the firstborn, were those that were begotten in the heavens. This is where the celestial order begins. So this is the reason why, over in other parts of the book of Romans, for instance, where it talks about the, we'll show you the manifestation of the sons of God, here we come into another area of mystery. It is in this area that the Apostle Paul brings out the positioning of sons. Now, for the earnest expectation of the creatures wait for the manifestation of the sons of God. He says he didn't even reckon the suffering of the present time to be worthy to be compared with the light and glory that was going to be eventually unveiled in him in the earth. Now, he said the creatures itself, the creature body that we dwell in, though under the bondage of corruption, shall be delivered into the glorious liberty that belongs to the children of God. This is the spiritual immortality. We know that the whole creation vibrateth and travaileth in pain together until now. Everything's dying round about and flesh, the whole creation. So the whole creation groans and travails together. Not only they, but ourselves also, which were the first fruits of the Spirit, being begotten in celestial planes, celestial bodies, celestial people, and we are the first fruits of the Spirit because we were begotten in spiritual realms. This is what it's talking about. We are the firstborn. We are the first begotten.
Well,
the word just before, no, those he, this is sovereignty. It's already settled in heaven. In other words, those he did foreknow, he did predestinate, because when he was done, those he did predestinate, he called. So that's what they said, I call my sheep by name, I lead them out, he predestinated them. They were sheep before the foundation of the world. Your name was written in the Lamb's Book of the Life before the foundation of the world. You're a believer, you're a listener, you're a Christian. He predestinated this and he called you. And those he called, he justified even beforehand. Wasn't he the lamb slain before the foundation of the world? It was only the act that had to be completed. All Israel were justified year by year as they, in their offering, looked forward to the sacrificial lamb. And thus this was projected to, for them until the event, and then it's projected over us who look back to that event. But we add nothing to it. So justify those we glorify. Now let me show you something over here in the book of Hebrews. After all, this is God's business. This is what he should have done, you know. Couldn't do anything else, really. We turn over here to the book of Hebrews, and we read these words. Now we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels, for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, should taste death for every man. Now we see the embodiment of God. Now made just a little lower than the angels, in that he had put on a body of flesh, which could die, where angels couldn't die. Now it said, for this was becoming to God. This is what he should do, you see. Now you say, you mean God should come down here and put on a body of flesh and die? That's right, because he was God. He could have stopped this any time. Being God, he had absolute control of the universe. He let everything happen that happened to take out a greater blessing, a greater good, and eventual greater development by letting this thing run its course. Let his spiritual seed establish itself. Let all the areas of experience take place. Let the triumph occur. Let the majesty of grace be demonstrated. Let the superiority of spirit over the rebellious Luciferian order show itself. So therefore, it was becoming unto God, for whom are all things, and by whom are all things, to bring his many sons unto glory by being made the captain of their salvation through his sufferings. See, in other words, then, translation isn't too good here, but the fact is, in other words, it was a becoming thing for God. It's the thing he should have done. He should have atoned for what we couldn't atone for, to be the captain of our salvation by his own crucifixion if necessary. This was the becoming thing, God said. Well, I couldn't do anything else. I had to do it because it was my universe and my children. And I couldn't, God can't lose his household. He can't upset his kingdom. And justification, now justification means that that there's nothing, no transgression charged to you. That even the areas of conduct weighed against the weight of temptation, the forces and vibratory impacts of evil, plus the necessary compensation which God put in and felt compelled to put in because he owed this to you, because you were his offspring, put in this environment with his foreknowledge prescribing destiny, and knowing what he was able to do, he could have limited evil to begin with, and knowing how you would react under this condition of environment, under these circumstances, therefore God says, I justify you. And he alone can do it. You couldn't justify yourself. People always try to justify themselves, all kinds of things. But when God justifies you, you're justified. See? In other words, the fact is that this is what justification means. That you can look God in the face and say, well, here I am. If there's anything wrong, it's up to you. I accepted your atonement and it's complete. There's nothing I can add to it. And I believe it's done. See? Now God isn't running around challenging it. He knows it's done. See? But he wants you to have the kind of faith that nobody comes along and keeps putting guilt complexes on you to beat down your spirit. See? By the time you know as much as this, and by the time you understand this, your desire is for good anyhow. See? And if it wasn't, you wouldn't be interested. Romans 3. This here is only, this is talking about the conditions of Israel and their transgressions, taken care of by the atonement. All Israel shall be saved is written. Now, all men have violated divine law. All men have sinned and come short of the glory of God. But all men that violated the law, came short of the glory of God, have been justified by his grace. And so we are not under the judgment of transgression anymore. And if you pick that up and walk away with it, you're just making yourself miserable. See? In other words, it's a finished work. If he didn't finish it, you'll never finish it. See? In other words, Jesus said it's finished. It's paid for. It's clear. Now, when Paul said all men have sinned and come short of the glory of God, you are sinners saved by grace. By the grace of the Father. This is a statement made by the Apostle Paul. But you see, Paul's quite a philosopher. There's many philosophic gems within Paul's writings of the vastness of God's grace. And to do this, then he dialogues himself. He speaks as a man, he speaks with the Spirit. He condemns the flesh and justifies it through the Spirit and so forth. But remember that ecclesiasticism likes sometimes to utilize areas of these passages in order in their administration that they can hold a very strong control over people. People should be controlled by the Spirit of God, not by ecclesiastical hierarchies trying to keep them in remaining fear. We don't want to keep people in fear. We want to set them free. We don't want people to come to this Bible study because they're afraid that if they stop now, God will get mad at them and go to hell. You could never come back here and it wouldn't make any difference as far as your eternal life is concerned, except you might not know as much as you'll know if you continue to come, because the Spirit of God keeps unveiling things. But the fact remains that whenever a priesthood says you got to come here, you got to go there, or else this is where you're going to end, priesthoods don't have that power, see. So I can tell you that. And there's nothing that I... When you start putting your collar on backwards, look out, you know. God wants to turn it around the other way. He never set his order up like this, you know. He never put on these frocks and robes and all this silly stuff that's involved with a... This is where they get in. They have to show they have ecclesiastical authority. We don't. Ecclesiastical authority is only spiritually endowed authority, and it must make itself clear not just by rituals and empty rituals and procedures. It isn't done by responsive readings or by reciting the Apostles' Creed and so forth. We have been raised with this background. We did it as a child, as a young minister. There's nothing wrong. You want to repeat the Apostles' Creed, that's all right. You pledge allegiance to the flag, too. This is good. See, but you don't do this every Sunday morning, but it's all right. The thing I'm pointing out is that we set up for form, we rigidly cement it, and then we build an ecclesiastical order. And then people want to dominate it. If they don't dominate it, they want to move out and control men or wreck it. And this has gone on in Rome, and it's gone on in Episcopalcy, and it's gone on in Lutheranism, and they get mad and split out and start something else because they couldn't wreck it. And that's why they started hundreds of churches this way. The only thing is that generally they knew more than in the earlier days, and they had points of doctrine that they were trying to divide over, too. Today they divide over power. They don't divide over doctrine today. Most people divide, don't have enough knowledge of doctrine to divide over. But in this area, the thing that I'm pointing out here now is that one of the most fantastic things today is a bunch of soup nickels that have no intellect at all as far as spiritual things are concerned attacking the Apostle Paul. Anytime you find some preacher attacking the Apostle Paul, you put him down as a BB brain, and don't ever let him affect your thinking. I don't care who he is, where he is, I don't care how big he is, you put him down as a BB brain. Because the Apostle Paul has gone to heaven and back again, and these fellas haven't, you know. They've come down, but haven't gone back up and back. They don't remember. Now, the Apostle Paul, everything they say the Apostle Paul said, he didn't say. In other words, they didn't interpret it the way he intended it. They fringed around it sometimes. The Apostle Paul sometimes said, I speak as a man. And I can criticize him when he speaks as a man, because he said, if I want to, because when he speaks as a man, he's not always right. And he knows it. When he speaks as a man, and he said this on purpose now, he says, this is to show you what a natural mind would think. This is what just a natural mind might reason out. But this is what the Spirit actually conveys, see. For instance, I might make you do this and do that and go through this and that, but he says, but I can't say the Spirit makes you do this or you're not in, because he says, let no man judge you what you eat or what you drink, and all things give thanks. And yet he says, you can't eat this, you can't eat that, and I wouldn't do it. All right? And I can tell you the same thing. If the laws of God said something wasn't fit to eat, you better not eat it, see? But I can't say that you're not a son because you're not smart enough to obey the Father. You're still a son if you get sick or anything else. You're still a son, see? So Paul found that there were lots of times things that Paul said would seem to be contradictory were not, the way they translated it, in order to keep their ecclesiastical hold on people, see. Be free. Take a deep breath and say, I'm a son of God. Nobody's going to put me under bondage. Get all the knowledge of God you can get, but don't take bondage. That's right. There, now, this is the... there are two kinds of use of the word angel. There is one place where the word for a ministering spirit is translated angel. This is, should not be. Relatively, let's get it clear. The word angel should only apply to the beings that were not the offspring of God. That's right. The word angel should really apply to angelic orders created as angels. Now there's different kinds of angels. There's cherubs around the throne. There's the, see, these are the and these are the anointed cherubs that cover it. There's several cherubic orders below that. There's seraphims, and then there are orders of angelic hosts of the heavens, which are the archangels, warrior angels of God. See? Now all of the archangels are not cherubs. See, now Lucifer happened to be classified in the archangel class and was an anointed cherub that covers the high order. But remember that that Michael is a archangel. He's not classified as a cherub. Okay? And I don't know, people even got their concept of cherubs, I guess, from the various procedures. Somebody that seemed to just bask in the light and to work in the areas of color, symphony, and light, and sound, well, they were kind of cherubic. And somebody that commanded the great host and administrated the transportation systems, and even before they needed armies, well, this was his job. Well, this was Michael. Michael was a great movie man, and the commander of hosts, and the educator of hosts, and the trainer of hosts. Another one was Gabriel. Now Gabriel was the great proclaimer of knowledge and a coordinator of information. So these angels were orders. Now there are other orders. There are orders of angelic beings. Now when we say this, these beings existed in celestial planes. They could be visible in physical planes. They could move around and guide and move and influence in these planes. But they could not, they were not embodied in these planes unless they took upon themselves a body by changing the wavelength of their vibratory existence. Now this they could do as long as they obeyed divine laws while under this category. But if they violated divine law, then they had left their first estate and might never get back maybe into it, might stay disembodied. But once violating divine law, embodied in form in the creation, they could never get back to the status they had before. Now there were propagating angels. Understand this. They were angelic orders that served before the Most High that multiplied. I mean, these people, they multiplied their own orders. They were propagating angels. They existed throughout the universe. There were angels who were in high classification, were not propagating angels. Lucifer and some of these others to begin with, why they were masters over an order where this could be done. And when they stepped out of their first estate, they and the accompanying angels of this category and out of this dimension, they didn't keep their first estate, but took on bodies of flesh, and intermingled with the daughters of men. Well, this is told in Scripture, in the book of Jude as well. Then this caused fallen angels. A fallen angel was one who left his estate, intermingled with the peoples of the creations of God, like Asiatics or Tongues peoples in various planets and throughout the Milky Way. The Earth wasn't the only place this happened. This happened in the Milky Way, generally. In fact, they resolved themselves down to find some way to disintegrate and try to destroy the throne of God, the control of God, the planets of God, the great space stations of God. This is actually, they actually concocted plans to do this. And so immediately Michael was put in command of the great fleets of God, and instantly they just started, you know, they can create fleets real fast, you know, just easy to make 100,000 in a second as it is 500,000, you know, or 10,000, or a million, it's just easy. So that instantly, why, they had all the fleets they wanted, and Michael was in charge. And Michael loads them up, and that's when the great war occurred in the heavens. Now, these were separate orders, but still none of these angels, even the biggest angel in the sky, was not greater than the offspring of God, which was his own spiritual seed, being his offspring, were spirit of his spirit and light of his light. Now, therefore, in the earth embodied, angels that couldn't die were greater in power than a man that could die under the fall. But before the fall, they were not greater in power in any way. That's why the book of Hebrews makes this statement, and this is why it says this concerning, though to which of the angels, now speaking of Jesus, for instance, the embodiment, and thou, Lord, in the beginning laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the works of thy hands. Though they perish, and thou remainest, they all wax old like a garment. They change, and as a vesture shall fold them, and even every winter they fold, and re-dawn out in the spring, and all these factors. Now, all these things transpire, but they shall perish, but thou remainest. As a vesture shalt thou fold them up, and they shall be changed, but thou art the same, thy years shall not fall. Now, to which of the angels said he at any time, sit thou with the scepter hand of authority, and I will make thine enemies thy footstool? They are not all ministering spirits sent forth to minister for them who shall be the heirs of salvation. Now, are they not all ministering spirits? In other words, angels were only our servants. And they were our servants in heaven and the servants of our Father. No big difference how big they are. They were still our servants. And no angel ever was as great as the children. So now look what it says here. In the fifth verse of the first chapter of Hebrews, under which of the angels did he ever say at any time, thou art my son, this day have I begotten thee? Never at any time did an angel ever measure up to the son level. Now, his spirit bears witness to our spirit, we are the children of God. Not only that, but we have existed with him before the world was framed. Now, see what it says now when you come over here, therefore. Forasmuch then as the children of God were now partakers of flesh and blood, he, God himself, took upon himself likewise the same, that through death he might destroy him that had power of death, that is the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime in this bondage. Verily, he didn't take on himself the nature of angels. He took upon himself the seed of Abraham. Now, what did it say? It says he wasn't ashamed to call them his kinsmen or his brethren. Wherefore, in all things it behooved him to be made like his brethren. And therefore, it says here that to bring his many sons unto glory, this is what he did. So God admits that we are the children of God, sons of God, down here in bodies of flesh. He took on body of flesh to be just like it.
All of his children then have taken on with none are with every, I always thought Gabriel and Michael as a special like us that just didn't come to earth and embody.
No, Gabriel
and Michael came and to
every once in a while. Oh, he came with a host, the fleet. That's right, he came with a big fleet. No, no. The reason why is that he's still an angel. Now, in this deal, the reason why Michael was different, he was our servant. He was our warrior captain. He defended our celestial realms and the planets of space. And he's coming in to defend this one, just like he defended this in the ancient times. See? Now, now there's another word which talks about the children and the daughters. Now, it says that he shall gather. Now, Jesus makes it clear that he was going to gather his elect from the four corners of the heavens. And with his holy angels, he was going to bring them also as a great and mighty army when he comes to overthrow. Now, there are lots of the children of God that have not dwelt in the earth. Yeah. But they're out there in other planets and other places. Maybe some of them have never been in physical bodies, which is a lot of. There's a lot of them that still may come throughout the ages to come. But this here, elect according to the foreknowledge of God, he said, I'm going to, also a lot of the elect are going back in the plane of spirit. He said, he's going to gather them from the four corners of heaven and bring all his holy angels with him in that day when he comes over here to overthrow the powers of darkness. The greatest spectacle day in history, not far removed, but this is what it's involved. Yes?
Is there any record of how far back to the Eastern
Is there any rebellion? A record how far back? Well, I would say 73,000 years. Maybe now we might say 75,000 roughly. Maybe it's a little longer than this. I can't tell. I don't remember clearly. At least I can tell you that it had to be pretty far back, because the niggers came in here on the spaceship. In the first invasion, after Michael gave them the first big trouncing, they came in on spaceships, and they've been burying niggers in Kilimanjaro for 73,000 years. So I know that the first wave of the battle was 73,000 years ago. I know 14,000 years ago, they were mongrelizing niggers in the east and the west and east continents, and it brought the catastrophes that sank part of those continents. I know 11,000 years ago, the Andes went up in the upper end and left the Mato Grosso changed, all because of these of the violations of divine law. I know that we came after this 7,400 years ago. Our race shows up. We come after this to start putting things in order. So again, I could go a little farther. Suppose I said that that this could have happened 1,600,000 years ago. Did they have any justification for this? I could establish that 1,600,000 years ago, that there was something in motion that had created a catastrophe that wiped out an ancient world. I can also show you that though probably 73,000 to 75,000 years ago was the first impact of Michael's defeated Lucifer and Lucifer in the earth. Because Lucifer in the earth, in other words, we don't, and then maybe not as developed in universal catastrophe as it became. For instance, we see the deterioration of the Chinese all within the last 25,000 to 30,000 years generally. Though, as I follow the migrations of the Tungus man in Ivar Lifner's tremendous work on their migration, they're worshiping God, they are thanking him for the supply of food and the reindeer, they recognize the symbol of evil, and they symbolize and incarcerate evil in the emblem of the snake and the bear. So they destroy bears wherever they go as a sacrifice to the god of light that they had killed great evil. And so this was back when steppe men were coming into Europe and were delving in caverns and caves where we can find hundreds of these bear skulls and the sacrificial order altars and the rites connected with it, and how it was a worship to the great god as a symbol of the conquest of evil. As represented, and that there was animosity between the bear and man, which they charged to evil. Now, I wouldn't go back to how far these impacts could be. The later impacts, we know, the final catastrophes, the total mongrelization, these things could 14,000, 11,000 years are having big impacts on the earth. But that these Negroes had, in great numbers, were buried way back in the early caves of Kilimanjaro, and the radiocarbon on their fossil materials, fires, before everything, 73,000 years, it would go back that far. But you never get a white man back there. You never get anything past 7,400 years.
Again, another study. When we have our 10 commandments, they're all stated plainly. And then when the apostle are said to Christ, what is the greatest commandment? And he says, the greatest of them all is this. That love
that
is above all others.
That's right.
Well, why is that?
In this is all of them fulfilled. In this is all commandments fulfilled. Because if you love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might, you're not going to mix his holy seed by adulterating it with another race, are you?
Well, anyway,
you're not going out, if you perceive this and you think about it, you're not going out and steal from the holy seed and from thy brethren. Hero Israel, this is confusing. This has nothing to do with your first question. Hero Israel, the Lord thy God is one Lord. Yahweh is one Lord. But the Ten Commandments, when you shall love the Lord thy God with all thy soul and all thy heart. Well, now, if a man kept this commandment, he would keep all the other commandments. It's only when he doesn't perceive this in its fullness that he breaks the other commandments. Now, I don't know what's going on in your mind, but I'm just answering what come out of your lips. Is that what you're talking about? Well, you tell me what you want quoted. It is the greatest commandment is to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and all thy soul. This is the greatest commandment. One of the greatest commandments Jesus gave his household is to love one another. Why? Because this builds a solid society. This builds such strength. If I love the brethren, I'm going to defend the brethren against the enemy. We're going to be a solid phalanx. We carry on. Now, of course, remember that the law of the kingdom is the Sermon on the Mount is a law for the kingdom, not for the outside. See, this is only a law for the kingdom. So therefore, you walk the last mile. Then after that, sometimes you can't do any more. But the thing is that when we say that the most important thing is that when you appreciate the fact of who you are and what you're here for, when you understand God, you understand the kingdom, when you know this thing, then you realize that we are a celestial race in a physical world, and that we're battling the darkness to capture the earth. We're going through the heaviest trials and tribulations of our period. It was pretty tough back there in the days of Jesus. They were stoning them, killing them, you know. They tried to get a shot the other night, but, I mean, they were trying to kill them back there, too. I mean, it's all the same thing. It's just that we're at the end of the age. We're coming out maybe a little more lucky than they were back there because the Lord's got a lot of things to be done, and we're past this point. But the thing is, remember that practically every one of the apostles was martyred. Remember that. Remember that, but the society hung together. Remember there was a loyalty that existed in the early Christian church. Oh, they had their fault finders and backbiters. These are natural human ailments which showed up, and that's why there's admonitions to them to not do these things, to not create these problems and so forth. And that all these things that the brethren should love one another, and they should realize as they love God that these were their brethren and these were their relatives. Actually, every white man's related to every other white man, you know. This is it. See? So, but there isn't anybody else that I'm related to. I'm glad of that. I'm not about to expand the family this way. So. There's a hand back there. That's right. They have long been doing this. Now, Moffat, the King James Version was, of course, is relatively late. The Brotherhood Boys were at work in the days when they changed the Syriac and Vatican versions. Remember that they changed them when they tried to get us to go out in all the world and preach the gospel to all people and baptize them in the name of Father, Son, Holy Ghost, and they that believed were saved, and they that weren't, that were damned. Well, they put that in there. That wasn't in the Bible. They put it in. Tells you in Mark. All right, the Brotherhood Boys were working in the 3rd century, see. Of course, the Brotherhood Boys were also working at the time of Jesus. They were trying to even swallow up Jesus. They said, now look, we're all brothers. We have one Father, even God. And so let's all be brothers. And they tried to teach Jesus the fatherhood of God, brotherhood of man. But nobody teaches Jesus anything. Jesus said, I am of my Father, and you're your Father. You're not my brother, is it? You're the devil, and I'm from God. Don't you Jews try to say you're my relatives. So it didn't work. But this is true. Now, there is a rather interesting connotation on that. Some texts that were fairly old contained the fact that Eve was the mother of all the living seed. And the word all living was relative to living seed or holy seed. In other words, if they were not the offspring of Eve through Adam, of course, they couldn't be the holy seed, and therefore that the Old Testament especially makes this differentiation between the living and the dead, and there's some dead that are dead while they live. In other words, it's not just talking about just flesh life, but spirit life as well. So this essence, where it existed in the early text, even though they may have sought to fit this into other interpretations later under ecclesiastical pressure, it was defeated by the Nicene fathers that Eve was the mother of the Holy Seed. So what's happened since then is you get some preacher who doesn't even know anything about that. He doesn't even so much as know there is a Holy Seed. So then he tries to use that to say that the Simon and the niggers and everybody else came from Eve. Another question?
What scientific evidence is there regarding the difference in the mental capabilities, especially of, say, Japanese and Chinese and like people? I was talking to a supposed intellectual.
Those Lucifer's intellectual, too, you know.
They have been told through the university, I think, at UCLA, that they have taken some IQ test with the Chinese and Japanese, and they're supposed to have the highest IQ of any race in the world.
Well, God forbid that I should have to evaluate my reasoning by the intellectual rantings of UCLA. And this doesn't mean you've met an intellectual. You just met somebody that's been exposed to an extreme line of unestablished propaganda. The best evidences of anything is in what that society or people is able to create. The best evidences of the fact that the IQ of pioneer white men is higher than intellectual Chinamen is the fact of what we have created and what they haven't been able to do with all the area they've had. In fact, they haven't even been smart enough to feed themselves. That's right. They never have been original in any technological field. Now, the milliamps of mentoid energy that come through the neurological areas that come out of the areas of the third eye and which travel down through the consciousness of the individual when he's thinking or creating an idea, mentoid energy. A white man has always been a minimum of 30% higher than any Asiatic in this field. Now, they are capable of intense mental energy among some, but their mental energies are not in the field of what we call mentoid impulses. Now, Negroes have electronic memory. Dogs have electronic memory. Elephants have, but not in proportion to their size. But they still, they never forget. And as much size as they got, an elephant brain's still a big thing, you know. But the fact is that memory is electronic, and with as much sense material as he's got to draw senses, memory being electronic, he's got a strong memory. But when it comes to creative ability and these areas of initiative, why, this is a different type of electronic energy. This is mentoid, and the white man is higher above the earth than all the rest. Now, he, not only this, but the differences in the brain tissue are remarkable. There's a difference in the convolutions of the brain material. Markedly so that today, experts on this particular area of medical science note that there's a difference between the convolutions of the brain of Negroes and that of white men. Visible differences, you can say. Now, you see, here's something I want to point out to you. When the devil wants to prove a theory, he forgets the last theory he used to try to prove. See? Because he's only at the moment trying to work with one. Now, when they were trying to destroy faith in God and creation and everything else, they were trying to prove that everybody evolved. And when they tried to prove everybody evolved, they evolved everything up to the Negro, and then they came right on up, step after step, and had the white man on top. I can show you that, even in the pretend of it. I can show you that in old textbooks in here. Now, when they were trying to prove that there was a difference in the stations even of mankind, they showed the differences of the Negro brain. They showed the difference of the Negro skull. They showed that there was 46 centimeters less brain capacity in the most advanced Negro and the most stupid white man, you see. They tried to prove that there was a difference in the cranium. A thicker superorbital ridge went across here. The fornum magnum was not set at exactly the same point in the base of the skull where the spinal column comes up through, you see. Now, this is where the skull rests on the atlas and so forth. Now, they, at that time, they were very glad to prove, when they were trying to teach evolution, that everything evolved, and the higher order you got, the more developed it became, and the skull became thinner, and the brain capacity greater. Now that they are trying to prove brotherhood, and they're trying to integrate us all, they're forgetting that they had these as lower stages of mankind only a few decades ago, and now they want them our intellectual equals. So now they're coming out with a phony story that they gave them an IQ test. They don't give a Negro the same IQ test they give a white man. They got a different civil service test for them when they go down here. Why, these fellas, most of them couldn't even get a driver's license if they didn't give a different test than they give you. I know this goes on all the time. I know that they got a test. It's just like the fact that they're resentful today that they got a test down in Mississippi. They want a different test for Negroes. They don't want a test at all because they know they couldn't pass the test that a white man can. They can't prove that they're smart enough to vote. No, because most of them are not. And so this is just one of those things. So don't let anyone come along and tell you that the Asiatic is smart. An Asiatic is so much smarter than a Negro that they should never be classified in the same category. And now, as far as trainable, touchable ability, and being out of the tongue of people, Chinamen and Japanese both are. Some people evaluate it one way, some the other. I think that with the capacities of craftsmanship and the reasoning abilities of the Japanese, who is far ahead of that of the Chinaman, irrespective of the fact that they talk about the KG and smart Chinaman and all this, there are smart Chinamen in some, but they worship their ancestors because their ancestors had a much greater day than they. But remember that Japan is the highest of ancient Mu, but there's no doubt that the Japanese technology is demonstrated. For instance, the technology of Japan is so far ahead of that of China was even before it got the Western way. Why, they had greater agricultural know-how, they had greater knowledge in almost any phase that you want to turn, except they were all off on religion. So, but at the same time, the white man's creations astonished them, and they examined them. Now, anything they saw, they could duplicate, but they never reasoned that sometimes things could need repair. For instance, their artisans and craftsmen would take something that was broken by a white man, they pick it up and they make it broken. See? And the first things they copied from it were things being thrown away, you know, and so they were all worn out. And this is what happened. For instance, I know a man that took a piece of shrapnel. He had a beautiful congressional medal and for bravery, and one of the few that received one. And a piece of shrapnel had caught. He carried it inside in his pocket, and he had returned to the front in a Korean action, and a piece of shrapnel caught it. And during a rest period, he was in Japan, and he went to one of their finest houses for making jewelry and so forth. Said, "I want this duplicated because I want a new medal." And so they said they could have it all ready for him inside of a few days. He went back there and he got the new medal, and it was just like the other one. They didn't even savvy that he didn't want it scarred up, so you couldn't. So what it was. A great number of things that were scrapped, you know, were taken over there and duplicated. Then they caught the technique and the blueprints and the plans, and they decided that it was better to start out with a new object. But don't let anyone come along and say that they would never have to copy anything. They'd have been out there, way out there, if it hadn't been that they just don't measure up that far.
And there some studies in Boston,
yes, back there was the mentoid energy and relatively back in the days of Lucius Larkin, for instance, he produced a tremendous area of psychiatric knowledge concerning the human brain, and worked on instruments that they developed. And he used to be one of the scientists down here at Mount Lowell Observatory years ago, Dr. Lucius Larkin. He wrote a volume, See the Mind May, is one of the great volumes on thinking, the difference in this. Now, I have volumes of tests made by the United States Army on reaction, aptitude, intellect, and brainwaves. And they measured Negroes against white men, against Chinamen, against Asiatics. And this is a textbook. In fact, I can show you the quotations, page after page, out of Army text, from Army scientists and psychiatrists and medical scientists, who proved that the Negro was way behind in everything. And then after the Negro, all the mulattoes and off-breeds were too. And the Chinamen and Japanese, the Chinamen came after the Negro, and the Japanese was ahead of the Chinamen, and the white man was way up at the top. And these were guides for the fact that fortunately we didn't have too many Orientals, but we did have to recognize that never should any military service integrate the Negroes, and that they should be left for menial tasks like pilots in the stable and so forth. You know, this cavalry division would pilot here and there and clean up after horses. they never used Negroes for anything important. I'll show you back when Dwight Eisenhower said that he would never permit integration in the service. I'll show you that in the military text. I can go farther. I've got text material and page after page of information for just what you're talking about. The other day I heard somebody who had made quite a good study on television answering this position. He said, now I want to get my point across. He said, history has demonstrated that the white nations, the white race, are technologically ahead, intellectually superior, by the evidence of what they've built than anybody else to face the earth. Now he said, I'm tired doing all this propaganda on television about equality and all this thing. And you may not like what I say, but just let me show you. The Army statistics say this, and said this up to a given time. Underwriter insurance policy said this, and they had a higher policy rate where there were Negroes in the fire department than where they were all white and so forth. And this was based on experience and efficiency, and Negroes won't go into a hot fire like a white man, won't back him up and so forth. So they went along with it. So this man got all this across, he's saying these things. Now, everything that he was quoting, and he did a real good job, I knew he was right because I've got the same evidence here in my library. But when he came around to this smart statement, he said, now he says, what's going wrong? He says, why all this? Well, then this fellow came on. Now he says, we're quoting from some new late scientists. He says, now these anthropologists repudiate all these other things because this is old-fashioned. We're making progress. This is ancient ideas. See? And so we've set aside all this. See? And so he says, you're quoting your anthropologists. You're quoting your philosophers. We're quoting ours. Ours are being accepted by the colleges today as authority. Yours are being repudiated. The textbooks of yours are being taken out. Ours remain. This was their answer. But the fellow says, but you can't help but admit that there is a difference between Los Angeles and the Congo. But it isn't too great today, you know. It was great. And then he came up with another one. He says, there isn't any doubt today that the capital of Ghana, the United States, is different. And if we were not their superiors, they wouldn't be fighting to be our equals. So they turned him off.
Who was it?
Just some young man that was smarter than the commentator. I don't know his name. He just stepped out of the ranks and was one of them that came up to challenge it.
Like my advice to you to pretend to call the like to describe the Negro as the highest form of anthropology.
That's right. And in fact, 11th edition. Is that an 11th edition?
Mine is 1880 something. I've got
the green one?
It's an old brown.
Well, the green 11th edition, too.
It's in all of them up to 1911.
Yeah. Well, even, yes.
The latest, I'm reading the paper again, said they discovered a new race of creatures that is supposed to be the moving link between the Negro and the ape. And that this is a race of species.
it doesn't
speak, they don't talk, but they are definitely a creature. They use tools and they just discovered it.
They found a tribe.
Are they still alive?
Yeah.
Well, we better keep them there because they'll want to make them equal, give them a seat in the United Nations. Well, now you know that.
Oh,
yes, you know that. I can prove it to you, you know that. Didn't he tend to the Negress and say... don't get away from that nigger. I answered your question. He healed the nigger. Well, I'm not interested in the man who drove the demons out. In your question, you said, is there any evidence that he ever healed anybody that wasn't among the brethren or wasn't Israel? Well, this could well be. I'm trying to think. The man that was obsessed, he set him free. The demons... Well, there were certain times there were things he didn't want told, and other times he did. There's reasons for this, too. This is a long involved subject. There were some things that he had a direct reason for suppressing and didn't want him to suppress.